Hello, everyone. My name is Jody Shanoff, and I'm pleased to be your host tonight for this important update from the City of Mississauga. This is the fourth session the City has organized to address concerns about the COVID-19 pandemic and to inform the public about what the City is doing to protect their health and safety. We will also answer questions from Mississauga residents. Joining me this evening is Mayor Bonnie Crombie, along with a group of panelists from the City of Mississauga, Peel Region Public Health, Trillium Health Partners, Peel Region Police, and Peel Regional Paramedics. City councillors and senior staff are also available to answer your questions. Before we hear more from our speakers, let me start by explaining how a telephone town hall works. Right now, residents from all over Mississauga are answering their phones and connecting to the discussion. We will hear from Mayor Crombie shortly about updates on measures by the city. After that, it will be your turn. You will have a chance to ask your questions of the mayor and our panel and to raise issues that you think are critical at this time. You can get in line to ask a question at any time by pressing *3 on your phone keypad. You'll then be put through to an operator who will take down your question and put you in line. For those of you joining us online, please type your question into the question field on your screen. Your questions will be read out loud by me, the moderator. If you have a question about issues discussed during tonight's COVID-19 information session, but don't get a chance to ask it during our call, you may find updates online. For health questions related to COVID-19, visit peelregion.ca/coronavirus. For questions about city service impacts, visit mississauga.ca/coronavirus. Our emphasis tonight will be on providing important updates and hearing the questions residents want to ask the city and health officials. Here are a few things to keep in mind when you ask a question tonight. When using your phone to ask a question, press *3 on your keypad and you'll be routed to an operator who will ask you to provide your name and the nature of your question. For those of you joining us online, please type your question into the question field. Your question will be read out loud by me, the moderator. Please try to keep your question as brief as possible. There are a lot of people on the line, and we want to try to get to as many of your questions as we can. Please ensure your question is related to COVID-19 and how the city and local community partners are working to protect residents. Again, my name is Jody Shanoff, and I'm pleased to be your moderator for this telephone town hall with Mayor Crombie, staff from the City of Mississauga, and local health officials. It's my job to keep this conversation moving smoothly and to make sure we get to hear your questions and have as much discussion as possible. Before we start getting to your questions, I'd like to ask the Mayor and Dr. Lawrence Lowe to say a few words. Mayor Crombie, what would you like Mississauga residents to know about Mississauga's recovery plan and how the city is continuing to work to protect the health and safety of residents and businesses of Mississauga as we start to reopen?
Thank you, Jody, and good evening, everyone. Thank you for joining us on our fourth COVID-19 Teletown Hall. Tonight, we will provide you with an update on our efforts to respond to COVID-19, along with our efforts to recover and reopen our city. Most importantly, we will be taking your questions. I'd like to thank those of you who have joined me on this call and who have made themselves available to answer your questions. Dr. Lawrence Lowe, our Medical Officer of Health at Peel Region Public Health, Michelle DeManuel and her representatives, President and CEO of Trillium Health Partners, Randy Patrick, Deputy Chief of Peel Regional Police, Peter Dundas, Chief of Peel Paramedics, and Nancy Polsonelli, Interim CAO of Peel, Region of Peel. My counselors are also on the call. From Ward 1, Councillor Stephen Dasko, Councillor Karen Rast from Ward 2, Councillor Chris Fonseca from Ward 3, Councillor John Kovac from Ward 4, Councillor Ron Starr from Ward 6, Councillor Deepika Demirla from Ward 7, Councillor Matt Mahoney from Ward 8, Councillor Pat Sato from Ward 9, and Councillor Sue McFadden from Ward 10. The city's leadership team is on the line for you as well, led by Paul Mitchum, our city manager and chief administrative officer for the city of Mississauga, Tim Beckett, our fire chief and our director of emergency management here at the city of Mississauga, Gary Kent, our commissioner of corporate services and chief financial officer, Sherry Lichterman, our commissioner of community services, Andrew Whittemore, our commissioner of planning and building, Jeff Wright, our commissioner of transportation and works, and Andra Maxwell, our city solicitor. Thank all of you for joining us tonight as well. We are now in the third month of this pandemic. We are in our 13th week. I want to thank everyone for their patience, understanding, and for listening to the advice of public health as we continue to navigate this crisis. We understand that this is really starting to wear on people, and I'm thankful for your sacrifice. Thank you for doing your part to slow the spread of the virus and to keep our hospitals at a manageable capacity. Yes, community transmission is still occurring, but I'm hopeful that we have isolated the majority of the spread in Mississauga to household and workplace clusters. The good news is that we're starting to see a leveling off of our cases in Mississauga, and we're working to slowly reopen our city in a responsible and measured way. We have taken a Made in Mississauga approach to reopening our park amenities, starting with individual activities that carry lower risk. As of June 1st, we reopened the following park amenities across Mississauga: leash-free dog parks, public and community tennis courts, skateboard parks, park benches, picnic shelters, and the parking lots associated with these. We will continue to take the advice of our health experts and will continue to monitor compliance at our parks along with case numbers in the coming weeks. We will not begin to discuss dates for reopening group activities such as multi-sports, bocce, and basketball courts until we feel confident with these reopenings. This slow and steady approach also applies to the reopening of our economy. We are all anxious to get business up and running and be reunited with our families, but only when it is safe to do so and when the numbers support it. You have heard me say before, the situation in the GTHA is much different than it is in small rural communities in the province. The GTA accounts for roughly 60% of all cases in the province, which is why we need to take a slower, more cautious approach to reopening, something the Premier recognized yesterday when he announced Phase 2 of the reopening. You might be wondering, what does that mean for Mississauga? For the most part, things will stay the status quo for now, except for, number one, the limit for public gatherings has risen from 5 to 10 people, but you still have to keep a safe physical distance at all times. And secondly, places of worship, places of religious assembly, such as churches, mandirs, mosques, synagogues, can reopen, but must only allow 30% of their normal capacity. All other closures remain in effect for the time being. If things go well, fingers crossed, we're able to keep our numbers down, it's possible that we might be given the green light to enter Phase 2 as early as Friday, June 19th. We will continue to take the advice of our medical professionals and we will continue to make our decisions based on science and evidence. We will take our lead from Public Health Ontario and from our Chief Medical Officer of Health, Dr. Lawrence Lowe. We should know more about whether or not Mississauga will be entering Phase 2 by Monday. In the meantime, I ask that you continue to make smart decisions. Keep your distance and wear masks where physical distancing is not possible. I realize people are feeling antsy, but we need to do this right, and we need to do it only once. Your haircut, nails, shopping, or going for dinner with friends must wait just a little longer. We've toughed it out for 3 months. We can do this just a little longer to get it right. So please, stay strong. It's the only way to limit the impact of a second wave. I'm asking you, all of you, please, do your part. We control the next wave through our actions and our commitment to proper hygiene. Let's not forget about the basics. Wear a mask while in public, wash your hands frequently, and try not to touch your face. We can control the spread of the virus through our actions. I have no doubt our city will get through these tough times and emerge even stronger than before. And now I'll turn it over to Dr. Lawrence Lowe to provide us with his update. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Mayor, and thank you to the other panelists, and thank you, Mississauga, for tuning in. I am pleased to provide an update on the status of COVID-19 and the pandemic response in the city of Mississauga. As of noon today, there have been 2,397 confirmed and probable cases of COVID-19 reported in the city of Mississauga. 1,868 of those have recovered, 319 cases are active, and 210 residents have sadly passed away. It is important to note that new daily cases in Mississauga continue to decline, and while the overall 7-day moving average for new cases in Peel remains near 40 to 50, driven in growth by other parts of the region, it has also started to begin to dip from the new plateau reached in the middle of last week. This is a good time for me, therefore, to reiterate the key goals of our pandemic response to date, especially in light of the recently announced reopening plans from the province. When we started to take measures to control the spread of COVID-19 in our community in March, the goals were to prevent, as much as possible, death and sickness from COVID-19, to preserve and protect our healthcare system, and to minimize the broad social and economic impacts of the pandemic on our region and on the city of Mississauga. We certainly mourn with those who have lost loved ones during the previous months, particularly those with family members in senior settings. It is, however, becoming increasingly clear that the city of Mississauga and Mississaugans have stepped up and that we are on good footing to achieve the first two goals. I will also state that this is what flattening the curve looks like. To a large extent, we have spread out the infections over a longer period of time. And so by dropping the tip of the peak of the epidemic curve, we have also prolonged the length of time by which we needed to maintain restrictions. This collective work of the residents of Peel, together with our own work in public health and our frontline healthcare workers and hospital partners and first responders that have given their all in helping those who have fallen ill, has really changed the course of the tide here and has saved many more lives that might have been lost, while also sparing our providers the significant trauma that was seen in other jurisdictions when those healthcare systems were impacted. In light of the reopening, we now need to think about how we, in light of the announced reopenings, we need to think about now how do we proceed on the basis of the places that have been announced. As Mayor Crombie spoke to, there is now a plan to reopen province-wide places of worship, childcare centers, and social gatherings of up to 10 with physical distancing requirements and occupancy limits to go forward across the province of Ontario this Friday, and also a list of other businesses that will be included in a phase 2 reopening that will go forward on Friday for many other parts of the province, but not for those of us here in the Greater Toronto and Hamilton area as we continue to bring this first wave of COVID-19 under control. For that reason, now I speak to the final goal I talked to you about, which is minimizing the broad social and economic impacts of the pandemic on our region. I have said before publicly that the closures were meant to bring COVID-19 under control and were never meant to be a permanent approach. Regardless of what reopens and regardless of how the reopening is taken, we must remember the steps and the recommendations and the knowledge that we have gained around how we can put COVID safely behind us, and that is staying 2 meters apart from others who are not in our immediate household, wearing non-medical masks when that isn't possible, washing hands frequently, and staying home and getting tested if you have symptoms. It's also particularly important for me to encourage all Mississaugans to avoid extraneous trips outside of the city where the COVID-19 picture may differ, as this will defeat the purpose of trying to get in front of the virus within our region. But as the reopening happens, as different things take place and we continue our cautious and gradual return to a new normal, it is important for all of us to put in practice every minute of every day the core 4 behaviors that we have learned. It's up to all of us to remain vigilant and safe, to take those recommendations, and businesses and workplaces and places of worship and daycares and anything else that opens must review provincial guidance that is available by searching for COVID-19 workplace guidance to identify how they can operate in a new normal that will allow people to take those core four behaviors to put in COVID-19 behind us. Through doing this all together as a community, we will safeguard the sacrifices that were made to save lives and protect our healthcare system, and will also help to prevent spikes of COVID-19 activity as much as possible. It's also important for me to mention that as we start to move into the tail end of this first wave together, it is likely that COVID-19 activity will flare up at different places in our community and in our neighborhoods. Peel Public Health will continue to work with our healthcare partners to test, trace, and treat as we stamp out remaining embers of this pandemic in our community. We will also continue to monitor the enhanced indicator framework that guides our response to identify areas for attention or if stronger interventions are ever required. But as I've said, to the extent possible, the behaviors that prevent transmission in the first instance needed to be taken up by all of us and become part of our everyday lives. Testing and tracing already occurs. Testing and tracing is what occurs after transmission has happened, and we must take steps to prevent transmission in the first instance and do the core four behaviors that will allow us to put it back. So please, regardless of where things go with the reopening in the weeks to come, I encourage you to continue staying apart 2 meters, washing your hands frequently, wearing a non-medical mask where you cannot distance, and if you are feeling sick, to get tested and to stay home. Thank you, and I'll pass it back to Jody to get us started.
Thank you, Dr. Lowe. Thank you, Mayor Crombie. For those of you joining us this evening, my name is Jody Shanoff, and I'm your moderator for this evening's telephone town hall. I'm pleased to be here with Mississauga Mayor Bonnie Crombie, staff from the city, and local community partners to discuss the measures the city has in place to control the spread of COVID-19. In a short while, we will be taking your live questions. In addition to hearing questions directly from you, we have the ability in this telephone town hall to do quick polls with those of you participating using your phones. Let's do one now. I'm going to ask a question and then read out a few possible answers. You choose the one that best reflects your opinion by pressing the number on your phone keypad that corresponds with your answer. Please listen to all of the answers before you make your selection. Here is my first question. What is your impression of the province of Ontario's approach to reopening the economy so far? Do you think it is too slow, just right, or are they opening things up too quickly? If you think it's too slow, press 1. If it's just right, press 2. And if it's too quickly, press 3. That question again is, what is your impression of the province of Ontario's approach to reopening the economy so far? If you think it's too slow, press 1. If you think it's just right, press 2. And if you think it's too quickly, press 3. Now it's time to go to our live questions for the evening. Just a reminder to listeners that you can press star 3 on your phone at any time to get in line and ask a question. Or for those of you joining us online, please type your question into the comments section. Mayor Crombie, our first question comes to us from an online participant. Aishwarya has asked, the regional approach is welcome, but do you wish you had a final say in the province keeping you locked?
Thank you for the question. And when I finish my answer, I'm going to pass it on to Dr. Lowe as well to give his brief response, because he will have input into recommending whether we're ready to reopen. But as a city, we're Mississauga, we're closely monitoring the pandemic. We monitor the numbers each and every day, and we follow the indices very closely. And we continue to act in the best interest of our residents and of local businesses. And given that nearly one-third of all new COVID cases in the province last week were reported in Mississauga, it was very important that we take a measured and phased approach to reopening, something I emphasized with the Premier as well. It needed to be a made-in-Mississauga approach that was right for our city. We based our decisions on the science, on the evidence, and on the data. And we've been actively working towards a gradual and phased return to normal operations. Some amenities, as you know, like our golf courses, our tennis courts, skate parks, leash-free zones for our dogs, have already been opened. And in doing so, we're closely following the recommendations of Peel Public Health and other health authorities. We will continue to partner and to work with our governments, our health agencies, and our neighboring cities to keep our cities safe, and to discuss how we can work together on an economic restart and our recovery. And now, Dr. Lowe, would you like to also explain to our listeners on why we have chosen to take a regional approach to reopening our economy and the recovery?
Thank you, Madam Mayor, and thank you for the question. It is very clear that the region of Peel, and which includes the city of Mississauga, is at a very different point in the pandemic curve than most of the other jurisdictions in Ontario. Now, we certainly share a pandemic picture with health units in the Greater Toronto Area, as well as some other border health units that have seen a persistent plateau in cases. And the most important thing that we've identified is that we have been using an enhanced indicator framework in the region of Peel to guide our perspective on areas that need attention as we're moving towards reopening. One of the indicators that we have been using has been a seven-day moving average of new cases, which has been floating at around 40 to 50 new cases per day, and we ideally would like to see that continue to trend downwards to support a decline and really to give us reassurance that the reopening that is taking place in our region is actually happening in the best possible light, together with aspects around capacity in terms of our healthcare as well as our public health and testing capacity. So we look at all these indicators on a regular basis to understand what the picture of the pandemic is in our region. And from the indicators that we've identified, at least over the last week and a half, it is clear that we are still in a place on the epidemic curve that while we have plateaued and while cases are starting to see a slow decline, we are not at the same juncture that other health units are currently at. And so it is with this reason that we at Peel Public Health continue to remain in constant contact with the Chief Medical Officer Health of the province and our provincial counterparts at the Ministry of Health, and really continue to have these discussions as to how we can make sure that whenever any reopening announcement takes place here in the City of Mississauga and the Region of Peel, that we are able to ensure that residents and businesses that are going forward are prepared. And I think it's very welcome that we will be opening at a later date because it does give everyone this call, first of all, an understanding where we are going as a region, but secondly, an opportunity to prepare to either do an individual's part in terms of sticking to the core four behaviors that I've spoken about, and also for business owners, for newly reopened facilities, to do their part as well to ensure that anyone that attends them is also able to maintain distance, wear a non-medical mask, and engage in proper hand hygiene, and ensure that people who are not feeling well are not attending and are staying home and getting tested. So that is where we have gone with the regional approach, and we certainly welcome it and the ongoing discussions that we're having with the province.
Thank you very much, Dr. Lowe.
Jody.
Thank you for that. Our next question comes to us live on the phone from Frank. Frank is the president of the Mississauga Seniors Council. Frank, what is your question for the mayor?
My question is that, first of all, thanks to Madam Mayor for doing such a job in keeping us posted what's happening in the city. But my big question is that if we know that the only protection that we have against the coronavirus is wearing masks, why don't we make it mandatory? Because we know some people don't do it, they cannot manage themselves. And I go once a week to the stores for shopping for groceries, and there's many, many of them without masks. So what's stopping us from making it mandatory, please?
Frank, so nice to hear from you. I certainly miss the seniors' picnics that we enjoy in the summer, but hopefully next year we'll get back to that. It's an excellent question on who has the ability to make masks mandatory, and sadly it is not myself or Dr. Lowe, as higher authority than the two of us, but we do know that masks can protect you, and we recommend them if you can't keep a safe physical distance of two meters or 6 feet from other people. Dr. Lowe, would you like to comment on masks being mandatory and who makes that ultimate decision, and why that there are some people, in fact, who are encumbered and cannot wear masks because they have respiratory or other breathing problems. Dr. Lowe, over to you.
Thank you, Madam Mayor, and thank you for the question, Frank. I would actually start by really highlighting that masks are certainly one part of the strategy in terms of keeping you safe. And as Madam Mayor pointed out, really the most important thing that we should be encouraging is physical distance. I liken it to driving in a snowstorm. A mask is like a seatbelt, and that's essentially where, and to be clear, a mask is a sign of respect for others. It is you protecting others in the event that you might be brewing a COVID-19 infection, particularly if you're showing symptoms. And if you want it to be protecting yourself, you must be absolutely meticulous about how you are using a mask. So you need to be, and this is actually a good time for me to think about, to mention how to actually put a mask on and off properly. So you should actually wash your hands before you touch the mask, place the mask on your face, ensure a tight seal that covers your nose and your mouth, and then wash your hands again. And then you should avoid touching the mask until such time that you do not need the mask anymore. And when you need to take off your mask, then you need to wash your hands again, take the mask off, throw it out properly in a proper disposal, and then wash it again. And those steps will be the best to ensure that if you are using a mask, it will not only help to protect others from your germs, but it may also afford you some protection. But it's very important to make sure that you're using a mask properly, that you're not letting it slip down, you're not taking it off, because again, face touching and increased proximity of your fingers to your mucous membranes, your eyes, your nose, your mouth. This is how inoculations can occur if masks are not used properly. But so given that I've said all that, though, the bigger question around how we can make masks mandatory, it's really a broader question just to what is really effective. And I actually would highlight that our recommendation for Peel Public Health is that it is strongly recommended wherever distancing cannot be maintained. And if you think about places where distancing can't be maintained, certainly I'm thinking about retail with close aisles, thinking about workplaces where people may be crowded, certainly trying to put in physical distancing, but in settings where it's not possible, then yes, masks. Certainly large crowds in public, grocery stores, drug stores where you might be in cramped aisles at close quarters, places of worship that will be opening, public transit, the list is endless. So it really goes to an idea that we should be trying to use masks properly, both to protect others from us if we're brewing a potential COVID-19 infection, and to protect ourselves if we're wearing it and using it in an appropriate manner. But in general, the strong recommendation still stands. Where things become mandatory makes things a bit more challenging in terms of enforcement, and can lead, I think, to a lot of challenges in terms of differing views, and my concern particularly is around social vigilantism. There is also an equity concern sometimes when masks are made mandatory, and individuals who may not have access to masks, or people who can't wear masks, as Madam Mayor has correctly identified, may be somewhat disadvantaged as well, and needing to prove that point. So at this time, it is a strong recommendation, but I know that it's the question of a mandate for masks is something that is being actively discussed, and I actually have seen many businesses that have stepped up and taken those steps on their own premises, and I think I welcome that, at least in terms of from the perspective of our strong recommendation and making sure that everyone in the community is wearing masks where they cannot physically distance. So thank you, and I'll pass it back to Jody.
Thank you very much for that, Dr. Lowe. Our next caller is Vivian. Vivian has questions about family groups getting together. And Vivian, please go ahead with your question for the mayor.
Yes, just wondering, if we've been isolating ourselves for 3 months, when is it possible for family units to get together again, i.e. grandparents getting to see their little grandchildren?
Oh, it's a great question, and I know Mother's Day must have been particularly difficult. I had the opportunity to visit my mom and leave her a peach cobbler, and she heard the door and opened it, and we waved at each other, and that was the end of it. It broke my heart. But we have been, and I don't know your age, Vivian, but we have asked that people over 70 isolate for their own health, for their own to protect themselves, really, because they are some of the most vulnerable. Anyone with an underlying health condition, pregnant women, and seniors, mature adults over 70, should isolate to protect themselves. But now that the premier has increased the gatherings permitted number from 5 to 10, hopefully he'll allow us to start seeing our extended families as well. But I think I'll ask Dr. Lowe for clarification, because I know he'll want anyone over 70 to continue to be very cautious. But Dr. Lowe, is it time that we can see our families yet?
Thank you, Madam Mayor, for the question. Thank you, Vivian. This is something that I've raised in provincial discussions with our provincial colleagues, and certainly I found it quite challenging that the announcement would move from 5 to 10, but would remain silent on the question of whether family groups or bubbles could start to expand. I think from my perspective, it goes back to just recognizing that the reopening aspects are going to continue. We, at least at Peel Public Health, will continue to monitor our enhanced indicators. We will continue to identify outbreaks that occur as they do through testing and tracing. And what we need you all to do, depending on what behaviors or activities you choose to engage in, are to really try to make sure that you're sticking to those core four behaviors. So making sure that you're maintaining physical distancing, washing hands frequently, staying home if you're sick and getting tested, and also wearing a non-medical mask where distancing is difficult. And where I think that comes in from families is, I think we recognize that there are many people who are, who have taken creative ways to see family and friends throughout this pandemic. Certainly, visiting someone at the end of a driveway, staying apart, also just keeping in mind, just if their bubble has also been rather limited in the last little while, then really looking at is there a manageable level of risk that you might want to engage in. But I think at least in the initial meetings, at least in the initial get-togethers, we do want to try to limit as much as possible the interactions. So it's a matter of trying to expand your bubble in a manner that that is safe for you and the people that you're expanding the bubble for, while trying to stick to those initial principles around physical distancing, et cetera. And while I'm on the topic, one other thing that I will also recommend, which would be super helpful for Peel Public Health as we continue to contact trace in the event that new cases arise, is trying to keep a log or an aide memoir of people that you may have come in contact with. Ultimately, when we get back to some new semblance of normal, even a photo of places you've been, photo of people that you've been with, in the event that there is COVID-19 that visits your bubble, it gives us a really great opportunity to get in touch quickly with those individuals to initiate contact tracing, and also gives you some license as well if you do come down with symptoms to get in touch with your loved ones and your family so that you can also encourage them to take steps to keep themselves and the community safe. So I think that's a long answer to simply say, as aspects of the reopening continue, it will be critically important for us, and we know what we need to do. I've said it a number of times on the call already. We know what we need to do to stay safe in order to put COVID fully behind us. And as long as you are following those to the extent possible and moving in a gradual, cautious fashion in the way the City of Mississauga and the Region of Peel is in expanding your bubble, then I think it's a matter of understanding the risk and taking steps to mitigate it as much as possible. So thank you for the question, Vivian, and back to you, Jody.
Thank you very much. A reminder to our listeners this evening, if you'd like to ask a question of Mayor Bonnie Crombie or any of our panelists here with us this evening, please dial *3 on your phone keypad, and you will be able to speak with a screener who will prepare you for the queue to ask a question live of our panelists. Our next question is from Joe. Joe's got a question about Access Mississauga. Joe, go ahead with your question.
Yes, good evening. My question is about getting access to wireless Mississauga. First of all, are there any locations in the city for those of us that don't have internet access that we can access wireless Mississauga? Or do we have an idea of when we might be able to get access to wireless Mississauga?
Hi, Joe. Thanks for the question. We do have a plan, and certainly all our city facilities do have internet and are Wi-Fi accessible. And Gary Kent will brief you on wireless Mississauga. Over to Gary.
Thanks, Madam Mayor, and thanks, Joe, for the question. Yes, we do have. We have 220 outdoor hotspots at present, Joe. And the best way probably for you to find your local one is to Google wireless Mississauga. However, I do appreciate that if you don't have access, then you may not have access to the Wi-Fi. So you can call 311 and they would tell you the location in your area. The better news is that we're actually investing more, council is investing more, because we do realize our facilities are closed, and that's always a great spot to catch Wi-Fi. So we're actually putting in an additional 80. So quite soon we'll have up to 300 outdoor hotspots. So I hope that answers your question. Thank you.
Thank you very much for that question. Our next question comes to us online from Diana. Diana would like to know, how will the city enforce wearing mandatory masks on public transit?
Diana, thank you for the question. In fact, that report is coming to Council tomorrow for discussion, and maybe I'll ask our Commissioner of Transportation and Works to talk about it. Now that we were planning to return to front door entry and perhaps even fare collection, how will we enforce the wearing of masks on our buses on MyWay Transit? Jeff?
Thank you, Madam Mayor, and great question. So Council will receive a report tomorrow that talks about, as you mentioned, Mayor Crombie, the return of front door boarding in early July, July 2nd, we're planning. And with that comes return to fare collection, so that will be discussed by Council tomorrow. And as we move forward through the resumption of services back to carrying more passengers as the economy reopens under the different phases, physical distancing will be a challenge on buses. So one of the recommendations, it will be that we make wearing a mask mandatory on MyWay because we know physical distancing will be a challenge. But it's not going to be something that we're going to be actively enforcing. We know that there will be a number of cases where people, either because of their age, we know children under the age of 2, people with disabilities or other medical conditions prevent them from wearing a mask. So they will not be required to wear one. So that's really kind of the approach that we're going to take. We are saying it's mandatory. We do recognize that some people can't wear masks. So therefore, our enforcement will be relaxed when it comes to this. But that's certainly the messaging that we're going to be issuing is wearing of masks, really because of the physical distancing challenges that we will face on public transit. Back to you, Jody.
Thank you very much, Commissioner. Our next caller is Carmen. Carmen's got a question about swimming pools. Go ahead, Carmen.
Hi. Yes, the question is regarding the community centers. I was just wondering when the indoor swimming pool for these seniors that paid membership for a whole year, when will that resume? Is there any idea what the schedule is for reopening with the pools and libraries at these community centers?
Carmen, it's Mayor Crombie speaking. So certainly the public pools, the community centers, the splash pads, and the playgrounds are something that we have not gotten approval yet from the Premier. But I will ask our Commissioner of Community Services to tell you about our plans to be ready so that when we do get the word, they can reopen. Sherry, Sherry Lichterman, can you respond, please?
Sure. Thank you, Mayor Crombie. Thank you, Carmen, for the question. So we're all very eager to get back to our community centers and our libraries, but as the mayor said, right now, those are still closed by provincial order. The stage two of the province's reopening framework does allow for pools and libraries to reopen. Peel Region is not yet approved to move into that stage, but we know that that will be coming soon. So our recreation team, as well as our library team, are working on plans to reopen, which we would announce in the coming weeks. I think as it relates to pool, I would comment that we will likely look to open our outdoor pools to conquer the summer heat before we would have our indoor pools reopen. But there will certainly be more information coming in the next few weeks. Thanks, and back to you, Jody.
Thank you very much for that. A reminder to listeners to please use *3 on your phone keypad, where you can be put in a queue to ask a question live of our panel this evening. Our next call is from Joe. Joe's got a question about day surgeries. Joe, go ahead with your question.
Yes, this question is for Dr. Lowe or for Michelle. Could you tell me when the day surgeries are going to start going? I have a family member who's had three scheduled dates canceled, and I don't know, like, what to say. Do you know approximately when these day surgeries are going to start going again?
Joe, we're going to pass that right over to Michelle DeManuel, who's the CEO of Trillium Health Partners, and if necessary, Dr. Lowe can respond. Michelle, over to you.
Thank you, Madam Mayor, and thank you for the question. It's a really important one because we realize as we have been going through the response to COVID-19, the hospital has had to shut down its elective surgeries like all hospitals have. But I first want to assure listeners that important cardiac and cancer and emergent surgeries have continued to take place during the last many weeks. We are right now in the process of what we refer to as our reopening of elective surgeries based on the provincial guidance. We are filing a plan, in fact, as of tomorrow, whereby we are demonstrating to our regional Ontario health area that we have an ability to start up slowly and to be able to sustain that startup against both the capacity challenges and the prevalence of COVID in our community. And as we listen tonight, we are at 90% already of capacity in our hospital without even starting up the vast majority of our day surgeries and other inpatient surgeries. And so I believe you will hear in the coming days ahead about the next phase of our ramp up on both elective surgery and day surgery. And we will be prioritizing those that are of the most urgent nature and continue to try as best as we can in addressing the backlog that has been created. And I just want to say thank you to our listener for raising the question, but also for your patience, and we will continue to monitor this and try to get those surgeries in the coming months ahead.
Thank you very much for that. Our next question. Thank you. Thank you, Michelle. Our next question was submitted online from Maureen. Maureen asks, what phase would include libraries reopening?
Wow, that's another great question. I believe libraries open June 8th for pickup and delivery. But why doesn't Sherry Whittemore, Sherry Lichterman, rather, our Commissioner of Community Services, respond to preparations for opening our libraries and community centers, et cetera? Over to you, Sherry.
Thanks, Mayor Crombie, and thanks, Maureen, for the question. So libraries are approved to open to the public in phase two of the province's framework, which again, Peel Region is not quite ready for. So libraries are not approved to open at this time. However, they are approved to open or to offer curbside pickup and returns. And that's what our library team is currently working on. We are targeting June 15th to start collecting returns at all of our locations. And later in June, June 23rd, we're looking to have curbside pickup for holds at a number of locations. So we are just getting our staff ready and getting all of our health and safety procedures in place. And we'll have more information on dates and specific locations for those services. And if you visit mississaugalibrary.ca, you'll be able to see more information as we look to reopen these locations. So hopefully that answers your question, Maureen. Thanks, and over to you, Jody.
Thank you, Commissioner. A reminder to listeners who have a question that you'd like to ask of our panel this evening, please dial *3 on your phone keypad and you'll get a chance to get into the queue and ask your question live. If you're joining us online and following us the online stream, you can submit questions through the comment field that's on your screen there. Our next caller is Helen. Helen has a question about religious gatherings. Helen, please go ahead with your question.
Good evening. In light of Premier Ford's announcement yesterday to allow places of worship to reopen at 30% capacity starting this weekend, we are a place of worship that represents a congregation size of about 500 people. The 30% capacity would translate to a group gathering of 150 people within our facility. Now, given the fact that Peel Region has not cleared stage one and the allowance for group gathering is at 10, would this be allowable for us as a church in Mississauga?
It's a great question, and the answer, Helen, is yes. The group size for gathering moved from 5 to 10 people, and all places of religious assembly are free to open up with, as you said, a caveat to 30% capacity. Maybe Dr. Lowe would like to comment on that as well.
Yes, thank you, Madam Mayor, and thank you, Helen, for the question. In terms of what to do in reopening, I think it really speaks to the need, as I've been saying, to ensure that whatever measures you take to minimize the potential risk to your congregants, it'll be important to ensure that there is adequate opportunities for hand hygiene, certainly non-medical masking, given that it is indoors, and physical distancing as much as possible in the facility, and also just really encouraging parishioners, or just making sure parishioners who are displaying symptoms are not attending. I think the other thing you can do, and going back to my idea of sort of keeping track of things, would be to keep a log of who is attending what services if people are amenable to it, because in the event that there is an exposure that occurs, it will be something that will assist us in our case and contact follow-up. But again, you know, certainly, as I understand it from the order, it is the capacity of the specific auditorium and 30% of that. We are still also awaiting further information from the province, both around guidelines as to how these would open. But I think the guidelines that I've provided, based on the strong recommendations, are essentially what will likely be something similar that are coming down, and really speaks to the need for all of us to be thinking in terms of those core behaviors, as well as how to sort of keep track of individuals who may need to be contacted in the event that case and contact management does need to occur. So I hope that's helpful, and I'll pass it back to Jody.
Very much, Dr. Lowe. Our next caller is Gabby. Gabby's got a question about hotspots. Gabby, go ahead with your question, please.
Hello?
Hi, Gabby, are you there? Have you got a question for the mayor?
It's Kathy, but Toronto shared their hotspots of the COVID cases last week. Can you also share the hotspots for COVID cases in Peel region?
Kathy, sorry, we had you down as Gabby. So certainly we have also released an epidemiological map similar to Toronto's, and you can find it at peelregion.ca/coronavirus/dashboard. A lot of great information about COVID-19 is available there. And why don't I ask Dr. Lowe to speak about the map and the hotspots in Peel. Dr. Lowe, sorry to put you on the hot seat tonight so much.
No problem, Madam Mayor, and thank you, Kathy, for the question. In fact, the website, and sorry to correct you, Mayor Comrie, but it's peelregion.ca/coronavirus /case-status, and that is that will take you to the dashboard, Kathy. And on the first link where it says for more information on COVID-19 cases in Peel, there's a link that goes to Peel Public Health's weekly COVID-19 epidemiologic update. And what you will find there is you'll see our last three weekly epi updates, and one of them, May 29th, includes a map of incident rates of COVID-19 in Peel. That is the update that you will want. We are also in the process of launching an interactive map similar to Toronto that will be added to the dashboard. I have recently been pushing my team very hard together with our information technology partners, and I understand that that will be up by the end of the week. I think it's important for me, since I'm talking about the map of incident rates, to really speak as well to what the data is showing you. And so what it's showing you is based on individuals' postal codes of residence or addresses of residence and aggregated into various neighborhoods. And then essentially what we're looking at is whether within various neighborhoods in the region of Peel, there is a higher than average or a about average or a lower than average number of residents who have tested positive for COVID-19 living in that neighborhood. So it doesn't speak to where they've gotten exposed, and it doesn't also speak to anything more specific to like total case counts. It is basically a comparison to just say, is the average rate of infection amongst people who live in this part of the neighborhood, in this part of the region, in this neighborhood in the region, is it higher, about the same, or less than the regional average? And I think it helps us to really understand where people who have COVID-19 live, but it doesn't necessarily get to the risk of exposure, which as community transmission continues in the region, could really be anywhere. And so again, it goes back to the importance for everyone to be distancing, washing hands, masking, and then certainly seeking testing and staying home if they're feeling sick, regardless of where they might be in the region, and really taking those precautions seriously, because we know there are no invisible walls amongst the communities and neighborhoods in our region. And if we're going to put COVID-19 behind us, I think we need to be making the precautions that we're taking an important part of what we do in our day-to-day lives going forward. So hopefully you'll be able to find the map. I'm sure if you have any further questions, you can always call Peel Public Health at 905-799-7700, and someone can help walk you through the website to find what you need. And hopefully an interactive map will be up by the end of the week, which will also be helpful. But really, it's important to know that the map doesn't necessarily communicate a specific risk. I think it's important, regardless of where you are in the region of Peel, to be doing those core behaviors to make sure that we can put COVID-19 behind us. So thank you, and I'll put it back to Jody.
Thank you very much. Our next live caller is Burson. Burson's got a question about the possibility of a second wave. Burson, go ahead with your question, please.
Hi. Hello. Thank you. Thank you for taking my call. So now that it's slowly reopening, and like especially, for example, the gatherings up 30% in the, you know, churches, mosques are going to be allowed. And as the example of Helen, like for a church of 500 people, it means that 150. So it seems like there might be a quick spread of the disease again. So what is the likelihood of the second wave, and what are the plans to kind of tackle that?
Burson, thank you for the question. Obviously, we've been trying to contain the virus and prevent the spread, flatten the curve, as they were saying. But you're quite right. We are all very concerned about a second wave, particularly now with the new loosening of the economy. Why don't we have Dr. Lowe tell us specifically what his concerns are and how we can prevent it, and when do you anticipate if and when there could be a second wave, Dr. Lowe?
Thank you, Madam Mayor, and thank you, Burson, for the question. I think there's two things that I would speak to here. First of all, in terms of completing the first wave, which we are very much still in, and which we are now trying to find our way out of it, while we also reopen, cautiously and gradually, in a manner that allows us to minimize the societal and economic impacts on our communities. And so certainly your concern around churches or at least places of worship, as you've identified in your question, are well-founded and really speaks to, as I've said throughout the call this evening, making sure that places of worship are taking the steps that they need to protect the people that attend there and reduce the risk, and that individuals are also taking those steps to reduce the risk. So what I don't imagine anyone wants to see is a lot of people heading back into a crowded church for a service, 700 people, standing room only. I'm picturing Good Friday services at my own church, things along those lines. I think what we need to do is we need to be very thoughtful and recognize that we know what we need to do to get ahead of this virus and to continue to behave in the tail end of this first wave to prevent spikes and flares. Now, where spikes and flares do occur, I am confident based on the enhanced indicator framework that we've developed that we currently have the testing and tracing capacity to test quickly, to respond quickly in terms of identifying isolating contacts, and where things fall through to ensure that they are able to seek treatment as our hospitals are starting to see hospitalizations decrease for some of the more severe cases. So that is what gives me a certain feeling of confidence that if people are able to take the steps that we have learned through the past few months, use the knowledge that we have gained as to how we can really control this virus, then we will be able to return to the new normal of our lives through just our everyday actions by making sure that we're being cautious. Then the other thing that I will speak to is the concept of a second wave. So the idea is that hopefully this, as we start to move into the tail of the first wave here in the region of Peel, that it will eventually end and we will get to a point where there are zero new daily cases a day, which is an ultimate goal of North Star that has been guiding me and certainly my team at Peel Public Health since day one. But also, we will be finishing up the first wave with a lot more knowledge around what this disease is, evidence around how it spreads, evidence around how it's treated, which will stand us in good stead if a second wave shows up. And we do know that there are many pandemics, that pretty much every pandemic in history have had some sort of a second wave. And it really falls to us, using the knowledge we have, and especially recognizing if there is still no vaccine and there is still no cure, when are the times where we may be vulnerable to seeing the start of a second wave in our community? And I think through using the knowledge we have, through the capacity that has been developed, through people taking those constant precautions day in and day out, and through greater knowledge around how this virus spreads, lots of questions that need to be answered about, is there a seasonal effect? Will it come back more in the fall like other respiratory viruses? Will it dissipate in the summer? Although evidence from Brazil is not very clear about that. We will learn more and more about this virus, and we will be more prepared such that the second wave, if there is a second wave, will hopefully be contained a lot better than the first wave was. And that's not to say that we didn't do a great job here in Canada compared to all the modeling predictions, compared to what I understood, especially when we took our first steps to close things just before St. Patrick's Day. And I still remember on March 16th being very concerned about if St. Patrick's Day were to go ahead as it typically were. People mixing, mingling, out and about, enjoying themselves. I was very concerned that there was a more serious picture that we might have been inverted. So I know we're not out of the woods yet, but to a large extent, we have been very fortunate in this first wave. I think we have learned a lot. We know what we need to do to get COVID-19 behind us. And certainly, with hope looking forward to the future, we can hopefully mitigate the impact of any second wave if it does show up. So I hope that's helpful, and thank you, and I'll pass it back to Jody.
Thank you, Dr. Lowe. Richard submitted our next question online. Richard asks the following, is there a realistic goal as to when softball and baseball diamonds will be opened?
I'm going to ask Sherry Lichterman or Dr. Lowe. I don't think we know. We don't have a firm date yet. Maybe June 19th for practice and training, but we don't know about games yet. Sherry, do you know any more? Do you want to explain better?
Sure. Thanks, Mayor Crombie, and thanks, Richard, for the question. So the province has allowed sport fields to open, including baseball diamonds. However, the city of Mississauga, in consultation with Dr. Lowe, has decided to keep our sports fields closed for the time being. And in addition to that, the provincial governing bodies for baseball and softball have not permitted play to resume for their registered players. However, we do know that the return to play plans are coming from the sport organizations, and that more team play outdoors will be permitted in the next phase that the province will move us into. So our recreation and parks team are working on plans to reopen our sport fields, including baseball. And I think that you'll see over the next, 2 to 3 weeks, a plan to likely allow, limited play on those sports fields. Hopefully that answers your question. Back to you, Jody.
Thank you very much. Our next question is live on the phone. We have Peter, who's got a question about ER admissions. Peter, go ahead with your question, please.
Oh, good evening, Madam Mayor and all the panel. Just a question regarding when people are admitted to hospitals within Mississauga, are they automatically tested for COVID?
That is a great question, Peter, and I know the answer to that because it's yes, but I'm going to let Michelle DeManuel explain the procedure to you. Over to you, Michelle.
Hi there. Thank you for the question. So, against the ministry guidelines, when we have somebody present to the emergency department, they are first screened, and based on that screening criteria, if they had no symptoms, they would not be tested at that point. However, if they were admitted as a patient into the hospital, they then would receive a test upon admission, and they would then be characterized as a patient that we are waiting for that test result to come in before we would then make a determination as to whether to put them into a COVID unit in the hospital if in fact they tested positive, or to put them into another unit of the hospital where we have no COVID presence. So that's the process that we do use. And prior to surgery, patients are also tested because of the higher risk associated with the surgical environment.
Thank you very much for that response. Next, we are going to hear live from Mark. Mark's got a question about public transit. Mark, go ahead with your question, please.
Good evening. I would like to know if there's any change in the future for returning to paid fares, and would that change the restricted number of people on board as it is now?
Very good question, Mark. So Jeff Wrights, our Commissioner of Transportation and Works, over to you.
Thank you, Mayor Carmby, and good evening, Mark. Great question on bus capacity. So with physical distancing measures that were put in place when we ceased front door loading onto MyWay and eliminated the need for fare collection, we significantly reduced capacity on our buses to account for the 2-meter physical distancing requirements. So as an example, on a 40-foot bus, we went from a typical capacity of around 50 people down to about 12 people, and that was a reduction of 75%. On our 60-foot articulated buses, we went from a bus capacity pre-COVID of about 85 people down to a COVID reduced bus capacity of around 16 people. And that's about a reduction of 80%. So with those reductions, and that's what we're currently operating today, we're leaving a significant number of people behind because ridership is starting to return. People are, as a result of the economy starting to reopen through the different phases. We will be moving to a different capacity on July 2nd. When we make face masks mandatory, subject to the discussion at council on Wednesday, which is tomorrow. And we're going to be going up to about a 50% bus capacity. So we're still going to be not carrying our typical volumes, but recognizing the need to provide more passenger carrying capacity, we're going to go to about a 50% bus capacity. And over time, as ridership continues to increase, we will also look for cues of how we could get back to a no restriction on the bus. We're going to see how the use of masks becomes, what the take-up is like once masks become mandatory before we make that call to remove the final restrictions. But we are slowly increasing the amount of people that we're allowing on the bus to account for the growing demand on ridership. So definitely an evolving tale. And with that, back to you, Jody.
Thank you very much, Commissioner. Our following question was submitted online from Don, and Don asks the following. Can you touch on summer day camps? The province announced that there will be information tomorrow. Can you provide insight on how this will affect Peel, and when can we expect them to open?
It's a great question, Dawn, and I think we have very good news for you. I will ask Sherry Lichterman, Commissioner of Community Services, to respond.
Thank you, Mayor Crombie, and thank you, Dawn. Yes, we do have good news. We received the guidelines from the Ministry of Health on how summer day camps can operate this summer, and today the Premier announced that camps can go forward under those guidelines. Dr. Lowe has indicated he also supports moving forward following these safety measures. So we know that with our summer camp program that we had originally intended to run, that we'll have to make some modifications. We're presenting a revised plan to Council tomorrow on what a modified summer camp program would look like. And subject to Council supporting that plan, we're going to be communicating to the public within the next 1 to 2 weeks on the modified plan. And anyone who is currently registered for a summer camp under our original format will receive an email with instructions on how to move into possibly a new camp registration based on these new guidelines. So there will be a lot more information communicated to both registered customers and the public in the next week to 2 weeks after we present our plan to Council tomorrow. Hope that answers your question, Dawn. Back to Jody.
Thank you very much. A reminder to our listeners, we still have time to take your questions this evening. You just need to dial *3 on your telephone keypad, and you'll get into a queue, and you'll have a chance to speak live to our panelists. If you are following us on the audio live stream, there is a question or comment field on your screen where you can also submit a question if you have one for the panel. Our next question comes to us from John, and John has asked the following. How does Mayor Crombie plan to address the economic collapse due to COVID-19? He further says, I suspect the economic damage outweighs the harm to public health. Mayor Crombie?
John, thank you for your question. And you're quite right that cities right across Canada, we're estimating, are facing losses of $10 to $15 billion, unprecedented revenue loss as a result of COVID-19. Mississauga, we've lost our transit revenue, recreation revenue, investment income, property tax deferrals. By the end of June, we will be in a $60 million deficit. And if the crisis continues, it could be up to $100 million. It's the equivalent of closing the city for 2 months or stopping transit for 11 months. We have taken action to address our shortfalls. We did take an extended line of credit, so we have liquidity. We've implemented a hiring freeze, and we have made the unfortunate decision to lay off 2,000 temporary staff. So, and municipalities, may I say, are the only level of government to actually have laid off workers. We're also deferring taxes and payments to provide relief to our residents and to our businesses. We are looking to other levels of government. The federal government has provided funding for individuals, for small and large businesses, as have the provincial governments, and now it's time to turn their attention to the fiscal crisis that the cities are facing and provide assistance to us. We're the only sector that they have not yet helped out, and we certainly need the assistance. We can't run deficits, and we can't borrow the way that other levels of government can. So really, it's time for all three levels of government to work together to provide cities with the funding that we need to help build back communities that we want to live in. At this time of recovery, as we're moving into the recovery phase, cities are faced with the dilemma of cutting programs and services, and as well as going through our capital plan and delaying or deferring or canceling those plans as well. You may have heard that the Prime Minister announced that he forwarded gas tax money for us last week, but unfortunately that's gas tax money that we were already counting on. He advanced it to us, but it's money that can be used only for capital and not on the operating side, and unfortunately all our losses are on the operating side. So certainly we know that large and small businesses alike are facing our problems. In Mississauga, we have consulted with over 600 community and stakeholder groups and business groups and organizations, so we've asked them how their city can better help them. And for the most part, we're hearing one of the main issues is the property tax deferral and providing rent relief preventing evictions as well, which the provincial government has stepped up to do. I may ask our Commissioner of Corporate Services and our Chief Financial Officer, Gary Kent, if he wants to elaborate any further on the hardship that COVID has caused cities and businesses. Not only throughout Mississauga, but right across Canada. Gary, do you want to make any comments as well?
Certainly. Thank you, Madam Mayor, and thanks for the question. I mean, there's no doubt, as the Mayor mentioned, there's a lot of consultation going on, and especially for small business, we're very concerned for that. And, you know, rent is one issue that I know small business cares about a lot, and the federal and provincial government have put some programs in place. We're not sure how successful that will be. So I think if you stay tuned, there'll be more information. As the Mayor mentioned about deferment of taxes, if any residents or businesses want to understand that more, if they go on our website, mississauga.ca/coronavirus, there's actually a tile there that will speak to all the options that are available that provide some cash flow assistance. With that, Madam Mayor, I think I'll just end by saying that we are not alone. This is a rallying cry for the whole municipal sector across the country, and we do expect some action from the federal and provincial governments, and hopefully it's a matter of time. We'll see. Back to you, Jody.
Jody, it's Dr. Lowe. May I also respond?
Please do.
Thank you so much, and thank you, Madam Mayor. Thank you, Gary, for your insights, and thank you for the question. I just wanted to address the question around whether the economic impact outweighs sort of the public health aspects of this response. And this is certainly what is known in my line of work as the paradox of prevention. And I think many of us have seen from around the world the significant results that occur when measures were not taken in adequate measure. We've also seen, for example, in the example of Sweden, where people know they did take a bit more of a permissive approach there in Sweden, the resultant economic impact was essentially the same, and they also have one of the worst per capita death tolls in the world, which really also speaks then to the challenge of recovery, because we all know that ultimately the economy and the spending moves with people, and if people lose their lives, it actually makes recovery that much more difficult. So I wanted to sort of gently respond to that in the sense that I think what we have done here, I think the steps that were taken by the City of Mississauga, by many of us here in protecting lives, protecting our healthcare system, particularly our first responders and our healthcare workers who would have had to deal with a lifetime or a career worth of post-traumatic issues if they had gone through something that has been seen in other parts of the world. Shouldn't be understated, both not just for the lives saved, but also for the economic impact that that would have had on our community as well. So thank you, and I'll pass it back to Jody.
Thank you, Dr. Lowe. Our next call comes from Bella. Bella has a question about large community gatherings. Bella, go ahead with your question, please.
Hi. To Mayor Crombie and the council and the panel, I just wanted to know, Celebration Square is known to have big events that bring the community together. So I was wondering if anything that is slated to happen in July will happen, or if there's a likelihood of things being cancelled if we apply to have community events like, say, Bollywood or any other events like 2-3 day community events, can we apply to have those in July? And I do see some events that are listed on the city website. Is there a chance that those will get cancelled because events have to be planned, there are vendors involved? how is social distancing going to be affected at these events? That was basically my question.
Bella, it's a great question, and what a shame. Our beautiful Celebration Square, that every single weekend during the summer we host a different festival, as you mentioned, the Bollywood Monster Mashup, the Mosaic. There's Ital Fest and the Polish Heritage Day. But unfortunately, all events have been canceled to September 7th. And we'll ask our Commissioner Sherry Lichterman of Community Service to fill us in on what the rules are with respect to the square, and when you might see it reopening, and how many people would be allowed. Sherry, over to you.
Thank you, Mayor Crombie. Thank you, Bella. As the mayor said, we have canceled all of our festivals and large events at the square and across the city through Labor Day. What we are trying to do is bring back smaller events where it's permissible. And so you will see some smaller events coming back to the square, very small, like the farmers markets, some of the food trucks. And so we will look to see if there are some small events that we can host as the summer goes on. But unfortunately for this summer, large events are canceled through Labor Day. I would like to note that we are going to be doing a virtual celebration of Canada Day on July 1st. So while we can't be all at Celebration Square or at all of our big city parks together, our culture division is putting together a great celebration that our residents can watch online virtually. So more information on that can be found at our city website at mississauga.ca. Back to you, Jody.
Thank you very much. A reminder to our listeners this evening, if you have a question for Mayor Crombie, Dr. Lowe, or any of our other panelists tonight about COVID-19 in the city of Mississauga, you can dial *3 on your phone keypad and you'll get into a queue and possibly ask a question live of the panel. Our next question was submitted online. You also have that option, by the way, if you're listening through our online stream. You can submit a question using the comments space available on your screen. Liz Zells submitted a question, and she asked the following. Will there be pop-up test sites so that regular citizens can be tested for COVID-19 so that we can safely increase our bubble?
Giselle, it's a great question, and I know there's going to be one in Malton on Friday, in fact, but for all the details, why doesn't Dr. Lowe share those with us?
Thanks, Mayor Crombie, and thanks, Giselle. It's a great question. So, Malton Community Center will be our first pop-up testing site in Mississauga, and that will take place on Friday. If you Google pop-up testing Peel Region, it should take you to our press release, which will allow you to get to the schedule of where the various tests will take place. I should mention that the overall testing strategy in the region is targeted mostly at neighborhoods where we do know that there have been higher rates of residents who have tested positive for COVID-19. So going back to the geographic map that I talked about, really going to those neighborhoods to make sure that we're identifying people in those neighborhoods who may be closely connected with those people that may need to get tested. But in general, our aim is to try to get out to the community. We've got a great mobile testing bus, a great team, and over the next few weeks, they will go to various places in the community a couple days a week, while the rest of the time they'll be working to test at workplaces that are in outbreak, and making sure that we're getting those under control, and also with people that are at risk by virtue of their work or their line of duty, such as first responders. So feel free to Google pop-up testing region of Peel. It should take you to our press release, and all the information will be there, at least around our first one in Mississauga at Malton, and that resource will be available to you as we go forward. So thank you, and back over to Jody.
Thank you very much. Callers who have been with us since earlier on this evening may recall that we asked our listeners to answer a polling question. The question was as follows. What is your impression of the province of Ontario's approach to reopening the economy so far? I'm going to share the results with you now from responses to that polling question. A majority, so 59% of listeners who participated in the poll, told us that they feel that the pace of reopening by the province is just right. The next largest proportion is 32% of listeners who told us They fear the reopening is going too quickly, and only 9% of listeners this evening suggested that the pace of reopening the province is happening too slowly. So overall, a majority said just right, 59%. Too quickly was expressed by 32% of listeners, and only 9% said they felt as though the reopening was happening too slowly. So thank you for your participation in that polling question. We're going to go right to another live question right now. Gary is with us, and Gary's got a question specifically about the Port Credit area. Gary, go ahead with your question, please.
Good evening, Mayor. I'd like to see if you could respond to a concern I'd like to express as a resident of Port Credit. We live by the waterfront in the residential area between Snug Harbor and the Bruckner Rhododendron Park, and it connects two waterfront trails. And since early April, our community has been inundated with hundreds of people on a nice day walking the streets, parking legally. And that wouldn't be so bad, except for the fact that I would say at least 75% of all pedestrians and 100% of all runners and bicyclists do not even respect 2 feet of social distancing. On a busy day, our streets could be crowded with 20, 30 people and people walking in opposite directions, and you literally have 1 or 2 feet, and people don't even move. And we've had people congregating in the Rhododendron Park 20, 30 at a time on weekends, and there doesn't seem to be any enforcement or monitoring. I was wondering if you could respond to that.
It's a very good point. In fact, Gary, I'll share with you that I live in East Port Credit and have seen the same. And one of the reasons we closed off our parking lots was to discourage too many people from coming in the parks, even though the parks stayed open, the parking lots and the facilities stayed closed. But maybe I'll ask our own Gary Kent, our Commissioner of Corporate Services and our CFO, but he also oversees bylaw enforcement. And Gary, why don't you tell us what we know about the enforcement in the Port Credit area?
Certainly, Madam Mayor. And Gary, thanks for your question. And we really sympathize for people who live beside parks, and I know the area that you live in very well. I mean, the rule is there should be no groups above five unless they're in the same household. And we do rely on people's behavior. I can assure you, though, it's not just the waterfront parks, it's all across the city. We have enforced we've engaged with thousands of people, like over 20,000 people, to reinforce the rules with them. We have 8 cars on the road. We have, one from a third-party company. We've got roving guards in destination parks. So we've got about around 30 people in total, and that excludes some of our bylaw and parking enforcement officers. And what we do with data is that we compile hotspots and we really monitor those. So I would expect that the park that you mentioned is one of those hotspots, and we can check that, Gary. We're supplementing that with our own bike control, and we hope that this weekend Peel Regional Police and maybe the Deputy Chief could comment. We hope that they'll supplement that with some bicycle patrols as well at the weekend. We've also, from our recreation team, they have repurposed and rededicated some of their full-time staff to be parks ambassadors, and they're also roaming the parks. I mean, all I can say is we're hoping, and we ask people to follow the rules. If you as a citizen see that not happening, please call 311. And if there's not a patrol there, we will get one there as quickly as possible. That might not be of great comfort to you, but we've got about 300 parks, and we just can't be everywhere at every time. But we are monitoring the hotspots. Thanks, Madam Mayor. Over to you.
Thank you very much. Our next question comes to us live from William. William is on the line, and he's got a question about testing and tracing. William, please go ahead with your question.
Yes, thank you very much. I think you've answered all my questions, actually. I was going to ask about the testing and tracing, but I understand you're already doing it. And the other part was the pop-up testing, and I was curious about that. And also whether it was something that could be tailor-made for seniors, and if and when an area is open, whether it could be detailed, maybe in a little bit of a news blurb, that for testing for the COVID. That's it.
William, thank you for your questions, and I recognize a lot of the questions have been answered tonight. So, Dr. Lowe, why don't you respond about contact tracing and then what we need to do to sanitize areas that are being reopened so that the seniors feel safe. I know that many of the grocery stores offer seniors hours, and we had another question lined up as well, and maybe you could respond briefly to it, but because I think the woman had to drop the line, but on the vaccine as well, and when do you think we can expect a vaccine, Dr. Lowe? And I think this might be one of our last questions, so why don't you get in as much as you can. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. Thank you, William, for the question. Certainly testing and tracing continue. Peel Public Health does this in conjunction with our hospital partners who run the assessment centers and Ontario Health Central Region, where we work to do the community outreach that we spoke of with the pop-up centers and the ongoing outbreak management in terms of getting out to workplaces that might be workplaces or long-term care homes, retirement homes that might be an outbreak. And then tracing is done by Peel Public Health. We currently meet the provincial benchmark of reaching 90% of cases to initiate contact tracing within 24 hours. And contact tracing is something bread and butter public health. We do it for all kinds of other infectious diseases as well. I would just make the point that testing and tracing is what you do once transmission has occurred. And so it really goes back to what I said in my opening remarks. We actually need to also try to get people to take steps. All of us need to start taking steps to prevent transmission in the first instance. And we all, you know, I've said that through multiple pieces in terms of hand hygiene, physical distancing, wearing non-medical masks, and then certainly staying home and getting tested if you're not feeling well. But to your question, Mayor Crombie, around cleaning, certainly there are lots of disinfection procedures that are out there around workplaces. The focus is really on high-touch surfaces, you know, doorknobs, keyboards, keypads, touch screens. These need to be cleaned more frequently to make sure that that there isn't transmission that is occurring through those through that manner. Certainly other things like screening of individuals and contact logs, as I mentioned, in terms of trying to identify who's been in a place at a certain time, that will go a long way to if there's an exposure. And also the screening piece will allow us to identify or allow proprietors to identify if someone who is sick and trying to come on premises, what can be done around that. And all of these are steps that we are going to need to take until there is a vaccine that is available. There are a lot of promising things out there. Typical timeline for the approval for a vaccine is usually 12 to 18 months. However, you know, I do understand that many governments around the world and regulators around the world have made a vaccine a priority. And so I understand that many of the timelines are accelerated. Certainly, it has to go through the same three phases, which is experimental verification that it works. And then trial in healthy volunteers, and then trial in a representative population to see if it's actually effective and also that it is safe. And then once it has actually been developed, then there is an additional time lag in terms of making sure that it gets mass produced. And we do know, we did see in the early parts of the pandemic, the global competition for personal protective equipment, the global competition for ventilators and ICU equipment. It's easy. I have to believe that you're going to see something similar around the vaccine when it does come out. So I would say until such time, because a vaccine is probably still pretty far off in the distance, at least 1 to 1.5 years minimum in terms of development, maybe a bit accelerated. In the meantime, we know what we need to do to put COVID behind us, and that's really sticking to those four core behaviors. And for those of us who are community leaders or business owners in the community, taking the steps to make sure that our premises encourage the behaviors that prevent prevention in the first instance, knowing that our testing and tracing and treatment capacity is totally available for all of you if things start to fall. So, and hopefully they won't. So anyway, so with that, on a hopeful note, I'll pass it back to Jody.
Thank you very much, Dr. Lowe. As the mayor suggested earlier, we are coming to the end of our time together this evening. There have been so many important questions and robust conversation tonight. Mayor Crombie, do you have any closing thoughts to share with our audience tonight?
Yes, Jody. Thank you to everyone for the thoughtful questions you asked tonight. I know we're all anxious to enjoy the summer and get life back to normal, but we need to continue to listen to the advice of our medical professionals and make decisions based on facts and evidence at hand. We've lost too many people to this virus, and it's had a devastating impact on our economy. We don't want to have to do this again. So please, continue to make the right decisions. Use common sense. Look at others, and don't be tempted to bend the rules, please. I want to thank you, all of our panelists, for joining us this evening, including those who have taken time off the front lines. We will continue to keep you up to date on what we're doing as a city, along with our plans for the recovery and the opening. You can follow me on any of my social media, which can be found under my name, or other updates could be found at mississauga.ca/coronavirus and at City Mississauga on Twitter. For health information, visit peelregion.ca/coronavirus if you're interested in that dashboard and the epidemiological reports that Dr. Lowe mentioned. They are once again at peelregion.ca/coronavirus/case-status. The days are getting brighter, so the nights are getting longer, and so is our outlook and our progress in beating this virus. So continue to be kind, think of others, and stay well. Good night, Mississauga. Thanks for joining us.